casting aspersions and repeating rumours. Do you really believe that Sigmar, in all his infinite wisdom and compassion, would allow the reforging process to become flawed? Or that he'd let matters deteriorate in that fashion if it was? Talk of taints and visions. You lessen yourselves. The rangers stared at Neve, as though remembering for the first time that she was a knight, and not simply a comrade in arms. She saw a distance in their eyes that had not been there a moment before, a wariness that made her feel tired and forlorn.
"Just promise me one thing," said Hammerfist to Carias. "It may all be rubbish, but if I go that way, deal with me, and don't let me come back. I don't care how, just don't let me come back. Wrong."
Neve could take no more. She rose abruptly, snatching up her helm, and strode off into the darkness, muttering something about sweeping the perimeter again. In her head, that one word echoed over and over again. Wrong. Had she come back wrong? Had she been reforged too many times? Had something worse tainted her soul? She saw again that terrible vision of infinity spreading out before her as the blue fire seared away her flesh and shuddered in the darkness of the steps. For a moment, she thought she saw blue eyes staring at her from the dark night skies. Her breath caught, and she stared hard into the darkness. There were lights in the sky, distant glimmers growing closer, two of them, one smaller than the other. "Tarion," she said, and set off at a sprint towards him. The two met in a barren clearing amidst the grasslands. Tarion staggered as he landed, and Neve hastened to catch him before he collapsed. She ran her eyes over the ragged tears in his armour, the half-healed wounds beneath. "Sigmar's throne, you look as though you fought your way through the All Points single-handed. What happened?"
"I've got you an answer of sorts," said Tarion,
his voice a pained croak. Neve offered him her canteen, and he removed his helm to drink greedily before tipping the water into the canteen's lid and setting it down for Crean. The Star Eagle dipped his head with a grateful ruffle of feathers, and Neve noted that even his light seemed dim with exhaustion.
"Tell me everything. Be quick," said Neve. "Wintercrest and his Brotherhood are out here with us. I can hear his sentries off to the south and east. They're far enough away now, but they may return in this direction at any moment."
Tarion nodded and began his tale, giving Neve a concise and abridged account of everything he had endured in the days that had passed. When he reached mention of the abomination that had accompanied the Rotbringers, she stiffened with shock.
"You're describing the creatures that I saw in that village, Tarion," she said. "This Lord Angholgot, could he be the one I saw upon the Flybeast?"
"I don't know, but how many such horrors can there be in the realms?"
said Tarion.
"I don't understand how it ties to your visions, but it seems likely."
He finished his account and then leaned heavily on his bow, staring at her.
"The Sylvaneth, they must be the ones I saw," said Neve. "And they said I had to pass through the Brazen Reach Gate to find them."
"They did,"
said Tarion.
"But we must be careful, Neve. I don't know what attacked the watchtower, but it was destructive and deeply unnatural. What if it was some weapon unleashed by this Angholgot's forces?"
"I don't believe it," said Neve. "You said the Rotbringers seemed as confused as you, were shouting about answers. No, there's some other power at work here, and I can't help but feel that it's connected in some way to this business with the fort, too."
"The Sylvaneth, maybe?"
asked Tarion.
"Perhaps," said Neve, sounding unconvinced. "But why would they want me to come to find them if that were so? And to what end? I believe they hold answers for me, but I don't believe they're the cause of all this. Don't ask me why, but on some level, I trust them."
"Who then? Or what?"
he asked.
"I don't know," she said.
But in her mind's eye, Neve saw again the infernal power spilling up from the well, and heard Zerkanos's muttered chant before she struck off his hand. Dread swelled within her, and she forced it back down. Panicking now would only aid the sorcerer's agenda, if it truly was him that had cursed her.
"This cannot stay between us any longer, Neve,"
said Tarion, pulling himself up with only a slight sway.
"We must seek an audience with Lord Aquila Hawkseye at once, if only to tell him of the weapon that was used against High Crater Watch. It's time we let him know what's happening and sought his wisdom."
Neve frowned behind her helm, shook her head slightly. "What do we know, Tarion? We have a series of questions and riddles. We can't risk the Lord Aquila detaining me for questioning by the Sacrosanct Chamber. With so little information, what other recourse would he have?"
"What then?" asked Tarion. "This business fills me with ever more confusion and dread. What was the dire fate that Sky Warden spoke of? Is it something that Zelkin set in motion, or something altogether other? What involvement do the Sylvaneth have in this matter? Why do they seem so keen to have you come to them? For that matter, how did they know to find me at High Crater Watch when they did? In all the vast realms, that cannot have been coincidence. Neve, what if it was they and not Zelkin who did this to you?"
"I believe it's likely the beings I saw in my vision, the ones that saved the child, were Sylvaneth," said Neve. "If that's so, then..." She trailed off, frustrated as she realized she didn't know what conclusions to draw. Were her visions linked in some way to the unleashing of this horrible weapon? Or were multiple unconnected threats converging at once? Uncertainty was not a familiar sensation for her, and she found she disliked it intensely. It lit a fire in her, made her feel the need to act, to seize control of matters before they spiraled beyond her control.
"I'll do whatever you ask of me. You know that I will," said Tarion. "But the two of us cannot face this alone."
"You're right," she said.
Her punch came lightning fast, connecting with Tarion's jaw, snapping his head back with its force. The Knight Venator crumpled, eyes rolling up into the back of his head, and Crean shrieked with shock.
"I'm sorry," said Neve. "I can't endanger the chamber with this. I can't have whispers spreading that the Shadowhammers are seeing things, that we're becoming corrupt. It's my curse, and I'll lift it alone. You've done enough."
With that, Neve sped away into the darkness, sprinting as fast as her limbs would carry her. She felt terrible for striking her friend again, and she hoped that he would understand. She also knew that the Lord Aquila might well see her actions as desertion while on campaign. There would be consequences, of that she was sure. Yet at the same time, Neve felt an incredible relief and a sense of purpose. At last she had a place to start. Her hunt would begin with the Brazen Reach Realm Gate, and it would end with the lifting of the curse that afflicted her, the death of those responsible, and the return of her abilities to serve the God King as she should. Neve would hunt her mark, and she would emerge victorious.
Lord Unghalgot sat upon his throne. It was carved from a single slab of rotted ivory, set atop a rusted dais in the midst of his slime-fouled audience chamber. Parasitic worms crawled down the slick tunnels that they had chewed through the throne's substance. Unghalgot knew how the worms were made inside and out. He knew what they ate, and how, and why. He heard their blind, idiot fumblings and understood everything about them. He had been gifted by Nurgle with an awareness of all living things, an encyclopedic understanding of their inner workings that transcended the capacity of a mortal mind. It had proved a useful gift. Unghalgot understood, on some disinterested level, that this knowledge, which he sought so that he might cure his tribe's livestock and feed his people, had driven him quite mad. Nurgle's generosity overwhelmed him completely, bursting the banks of his sanity like a river swollen to rancid flood. Unghalgot had been transformed into a vector for the very parasites and plagues that he once sought to prevent. He was pleased by this. It had happened long ago, and he was content in his role as a servant of Nurgle. He hoped to emulate his god's largesse. The rat creature was still talking, he realized. Excuses and blandishments spilled from it in a chittering stream. It was a Skaven, some crawling, genuflecting envoy from the clan Fesic. Its leprous body was wrapped in mouldering robes. It grovelled before his throne, casting nervous glances at Unghulgot's bodyguards. His contempt for this creature twisted his lips into a sneer. It was laughable to even call the Skaven allies, as though they were somehow equal partners in this war, as though the clan's pestilence sought anything more noble or far-reaching than simple ruination for its own sake. Idly, Unghulgot contemplated how he would dissect this creature. He catalogued its pustulant organs in his mind, discarded its rheumy eyes as useless, dropped its fangs into a brass dish for later use. Lord Unghulgot took a deep, phlegm-thick breath and forced himself to focus. He loomed over the Skaven. The ratman's words shriveled like blighted crops before his intense stare. It fell silent, and he smelt the rank animal musk of fear that leaked from its glands.
"Do the flesh raids continue?"
asked Unghulgot.
"They do, much, most, highest, fettersome one," chittered the Skaven. "Far, far across Verdantia. Yes, oh, such plenty much flesh bounty does Clan Fesic gather for you. Greatest of—"
Unghulgot waved a hand, a sharp gesture that choked the Skaven into silence. Its snout bobbed nervously, nose twitching and fangs bared beneath its rotten cowl.
"Have you been sufficiently circumspect?"
Unghulgot knew the answer to this question, but he asked regardless. The obvious had its place, he had found, in discussion with the lower orders of beast.
"Veil hidings, we have scurried quick fast behind, O most foul, O most rancid and reviled one," said the Skaven, waving its hand claws in a grandiose gesture. "Subtle we have been mean, yes, so cunning, even the clan's Eshin could have not emulated such cleverness."
"Yet I hear reports of plague weapons being used upon the flesh stocks," said Unghulgot.
His yellowed stare bore relentlessly into the Skaven's beady red eyes, until the creature abased itself before him, tail twitching high with fear.
"I hear that the Ravensbeak tribe are wiped out entirely by a malaise that turned their muscle to rot and their flesh to squirming pus. I hear that the stockade of the Strongblade tribe was overwhelmed by tentacled growths that slew half the flesh stock. I hear these things and many more. What I hear, rat, does not bring to mind the word circumspect."
"Lies! Lies!"
shrieked the Skaven, springing to its foot claws and dancing an angry jig.
"Fake tales twisted by jealous rival foes! Yes, O foulest of filth spreaders! Yes, these are whispering squeakings of the clan Morbidus! We are quiet cunning, and we gather take the flesh for you as you command!"
The Skaven realized the scale of its outburst. Another wash of the fear musk reached Unghulgot's nostrils. The rat man collapsed into an obsequious heap of rags and squirming flesh.
"If you have rivals, and they are interfering with my plans, then that is as much your problem as if it were your own warriors performing these deeds, rat. Do you understand me?"
The Skaven drew breath to launch into another diatribe. Unghulgot's glare persuaded it otherwise. It nodded instead, eyes wide. Its tail twitched ceaselessly.
"Go," said Unghulgot. "Return to your burrows. Tell your kin that I expect a more restrained and respectful standard of service. I want my harvest brought in swiftly, quietly, and without further complication."
The Skaven nodded again. Unghulgot knew that it was already calculating how dangerous this alliance had become, whether now would be the time to turn its fellows upon him.
"Tell them also that you have struck a bargain with me," he said.
The Skaven was suddenly very still, red eyes gleaming beneath its cowl. Perhaps not so roomy after all, he thought.
"Tell them that I will provide double the warpstone payment that was originally agreed, both for the flesh tribes and for any monsters that you capture."
"Such generosity!"
squealed the Skaven, now animated and gleeful.
"Oh, most magnanimous master of mould, great, great producer of poxies, highest and most big, vast—"
"No!"
thundered Angholgot, slamming one fist against the arm of his throne. The Skaven gave a shriek of terror and turned, whip fast, scurrying out of the chamber on both sets of claws. It left a reeking trail behind itself that was soon lost in the maggot-thick filth of the audience chamber. Angholgot's bodyguards chuckled at the spectacle. Their laughter was basso, rumbling deep in their cavernous chests. Their flesh was all stitches and slabs. He had worked on them extensively. Angholgot allowed himself a thin smile of his own. The flesh harvest would continue apace, and truly what matter at this stage if his allies were careful or not? Already the harvest had been excellent. The life pits seethed with packed-in cattle of every species. The meat kilns flared night and day, and the stitch threshers lashed and sang, rendering living beings into useful components, then reshaping them into something greater. In many ways, Angholgot thought, he was doing for Grandfather Nurgle what Sigmar had done for himself.
He was reforging. First the living creatures of Verdantia, then the flesh cattle of the neighbouring Jade Kingdoms, then more and more. There would be no limits to Lord Angholgot's generosity. All would feel its touch.
Act 2. Chapter 7. Neve Blacktalon rode the winds aetheric, thankful for the quirk of reforging that had allowed her to truly windshift, as the Paladors did. She rested little and kept one eye on her astral compass. She traversed distances each day that would have taken weeks for an army to march, and swept with ease through terrain that would have given even the most sure-footed elf or stout Dwardin pause. When Neve made camp, she did so in hidden places. One night, she climbed high into the branches of a gargantuous tree that stood sentinel over a deep ravine. Small simian things with bulbous eyes scuttered through the branches as she climbed, then watched her warily until dawn's light saw her moving on again. Another night, she found a cleft in a huge rock formation and scrambled deep inside, ready to fight any creature that might protest her use of its shelter. Other nights, she simply kept moving, running on through the darkness until dawn's light welled over the horizon again. It was not a pleasant journey, for all that it had begun with such a sense of purpose. Neve was painfully aware that she had abandoned her post. During her hours of rest, she meditated upon her choices and upon the nature of the mission she had undertaken. She interrogated herself fiercely, searching for any hint that her decisions had been made in error, or for selfish reasons, or that her ability to think rationally had in some way been corrupted by the visions she was suffering from. After each such stern inner conversation, she returned to full consciousness, more certain than ever that what she did was the right thing. Whoever he was, whatever significance he had to her, the Chaos Champion in her visions was a mark that had to be hunted. She knew it as surely as she knew her own name, as certain as her loyalty to Sigmar and the heavens themselves. How the Sylvaneth of the Dreadwood Glade came into matters, Neve was less sure, but she was determined to locate this Ithari and demand of her all the answers she had not given Tarion. On the sixth day, Neve neared the Brazen Reach Realm Gate and prepared herself to pass through it. It was neither a frequently used nor well-known passage. Indeed, Neve was sure that, beyond the Shadowhammers and other vanguard chambers like them, few of Sigmar's servants had ever had occasion to seek out or travel through this portal. The reason was simple. On the Gurish side, the Brazen Reach Realm Gate lay within the maw of a very active, very angry volcano. That did not mean that it was entirely unguarded. Neve was forced to dash between basalt outcroppings and craggy ridges on the mountain's lower slopes, staying low to avoid the eyes of the Dwardin, whose squat watchtowers studded the volcano's flanks. She heard the clangor of forge hammers at work within those smoke-belching fortifications, and saw lava flows directed through a complex series of steam locks to power the industrial workshops that lay inside. Picking her way along empty lava channels, leaping gaps over bubbling molten rock, Neve avoided the sentinels and made her way towards the caldera's rim. At one point, she froze for long minutes in a shallow channel as an enchanted search beam leapt out from atop one of the watchtowers. Dwardin voices could be heard shouting back and forth in a dialect she was unfamiliar with, yet their meaning was clear. They believed they had spotted something. When she sensed heavy footfalls approaching, Neve crawled swiftly from her hiding place and, with a prayer to Sigmar, dashed through a drifting cloud of fumes towards another ditch. For a heart-stopping moment, she was completely exposed, willing the search beam not to swing in her direction or a sharp-eyed Dwardin to spot her moving form. Then she was back into cover, crawling away arm over arm into a network of narrow channels, and leaving her frustrated pursuers to shout to one another on the slopes below. Neve was nearing the top, with the heartbeat of the volcano thumping through her feet and the red-hot ferocity of its maw rumbling close above her, when she felt a sense of watchfulness steal over her. Senses tingling, Neve slid into a crevice in the rock and stared out from her vantage point. Though the heat haze made the air swim, she was high above the surrounding lands here and, with her exceptional eyesight, she could see for miles upon miles. Yet after long minutes of staring searchingly into the distance, she could make out nothing untoward, unless perhaps it was a slight speck that had drifted, there and gone, amidst the swimming grey of the far horizon. She shook her head and wondered whether the visions were making her paranoid now as well. "Please, Sigmar, don't let them send me mad," she muttered to herself, tasting ash on her tongue as the volcano rumbled around her. The visions had bubbled beneath the surface of her psyche for days now, as though in setting out on her journey she had somehow done their bidding and appeased them. Still, as she slid out of the crevice and recommenced her hand-over-hand scaling of the volcano's highest slopes, she could not quite shake off the echo of a child's sorrowful cries. At the peak, Neve hauled herself up and stood before the unbridled fury of the volcano. Below her, perhaps 100 feet down, a sea of lava bubbled and boiled. The heat was tremendous. If she had not possessed the blessed constitution of the Stormcast Eternals, Neve knew she would have been driven back from the edge, quite possibly choking and blinded by the poisonous fumes and billowing smoke. Instead, she took a deep breath, opened her arms out wide, and fell forward over the lip of the volcano into the caldera below. For a brief instant, the lava flashed up towards her, and Neve thought how much less terrifying this must be for Tarion, with his powers of flight, his ability to bank up and away on the roiling thermals if he lost his nerve. Neve could not fly. She could only fall. And so she did, courageous and determined, straight through the realm gate that shimmered like an invisible skin mere yards above the lava's surface. Suddenly, blue motes billowed from the molten liquid, tearing her into the blackness. Weird light shimmers. A child cries, lost, wrenching sobs, dragged up from some deep well of sorrow too profound to be human. Branches shudder and rattle in the cold night breeze. Blue fire dances in firelight whirls through air made thick with ashes. Yellow eyes stare with hateful intensity.
blue eyes sear and spit amidst the darkness, like the fury of the storm, then turn cold with hate.
Neve emerged from furious heat and sound into the soft sighing of trees and a steady drizzle. She landed and rolled, coming up in a crouch with her axes drawn. She took in her surroundings quickly and found herself to be alone. She rose, standing upon a dais circled by four empty braziers inscribed with rampant beasts. She had emerged, fallen in truth, from a wide stone archway that, from this side, appeared decrepit and utterly without purpose. Neve had transitioned from daytime in the realm of beasts to night in the realm of life, and with low, dense clouds gathering overhead, she found little light to see by. Most would have been blinded entirely by the darkness, but Neve could make out the tall jester's pines that clustered close around the realm gate, and the narrow path that wound away down the slope between them. "Well, Ithari, I'm through the damn realm gate for what it's worth," she muttered. "Now let's hope I get more for my troubles than just rained on. Time to look beyond the river's third winding, wherever in Sigmar's name that is." Knowing that she needed to get her bearings, Neve set off along the narrow path through the trees. She kept her pace slow and careful, watchful for any sign of danger or ambush. "You're following a trail of visions and cryptic words from a forest spirit," she told herself. "You're in territory you've never trod before, only heard Tarion speak of. And what can he see from up in the damn clouds anyway? Trust nothing. Expect trouble, and don't shame yourself or the hammers, eh?" After an hour or more, Neve emerged onto a rocky promontory that jutted out over a steep slope. Scree and dirt dropped away before her, trees clinging tenaciously to the slope amidst tangled vines and outcroppings of lambent night blooms. She took a deep breath, feeling the sharp tang of life magic in the air. As she stood atop the ridge, the clouds tattered apart, and slivers of moonlight fell through them. They revealed a sweeping vista that made her breath catch. Below her, the slope dropped away for hundreds of feet, down into lushly forested foothills that marched away towards a distant river valley. The river itself began in a series of waterfalls, its source lost amidst a chain of floating islands that drifted high and rootless in the night sky. "Beyond the third winding," she murmured, peering into the shadowed night. The river did indeed wind like a serpent as it made its way along the valley floor, but it did so only twice before it vanished through a cleft in a distant hillside and was lost to sight. "Well, looks like I know where I'm going, at least," said Neve to herself. She rolled her shoulders, stretched the cricks out of her neck, and set off again into the gloom. Dawn broke golden as Neve loped along the hilltops overlooking the river valley, finally reaching another crest where standing stones stood in a huge creeper-tangled ring. Walking between the stones, she felt a strange sense of reverence grip her that had nothing to do with her faith in Sigmar. It was an older feeling, unsettling but somehow familiar. Neve crossed the circle and stood at the edge, looking out over the hilltops along the course of the river. "That's..." The words died on her lips, and her brows drew down in puzzlement. Ahead, the hills sloped away towards wetland plains, where jade outcroppings jutted up amidst swirling mists. Distance rapidly became hazy, the rays of sunrise falling like blood through the vapours, limning a suggestion of what might be a mountain or mountains in the far distance. Yet it was not the landscape that surprised her. It was rather the resurgent sense of familiarity that she felt welling up within her. The feeling was so strong that she put out a hand to steady herself, leaning heavily against one of the ancient menhirs. Blue eyes flashed behind her own, and darkness raced up towards her. Neve snatched her hand away and blinked at the blue sparks that stuttered, then faded where she had touched the stone.
"What in Sigmar's name is this?" she murmured. "Have I been here before?" She hadn't, she was sure, and yet the feeling persisted. For whatever reason, Neve knew this landscape, and she knew where to go. Yet there was more, she now realized. The mists over the marshes had a bilious tint to them, and a scent of rot rose up on the breeze. Her senses tingled as they detected the corruption of chaos ahead, and Neve's frown became a scowl. The next day and night passed Neve by as though she moved through a strange dream. As the hours passed and the sun rose fat and crimson through the sky, she felt more and more the sense of uncomfortable familiarity, as though she had looked upon these lands before through the eyes of one other than herself. When the hulking silhouette on the horizon resolved more definitely into a single mountain, the sense became stronger still. Neve knew before she even saw it that the peak would split in two, as though some vast sword blow had been levelled at it by an angry god. Beyond that peak, she felt sure she would find answers. For all Neve's sense of urgency, however, she was forced to slow her pace as she picked a careful path through the wetlands, for sinkholes and quicksand abounded. Coiling things squirmed through the groundwater, and more than once she had to discourage questing tendrils with her axes. The smell of rot and corruption grew slowly more pervasive, from a faint fungal taste at the back of her throat into a full-blown stench that wafted across the wetlands in waves. Droning insects swept busily across the skies, and she felt weariness and sorrow threatening as the undergrowth around her turned from vibrant emerald growth to dingy, rot-hued thickets. Neve had fought the servants of Nurgle many times, had indeed made herself the nemesis of one of the plague god's chief demons on several occasions. She knew the signs of Nurgle's touch well, and that this slow entropy was but a shadow of the foulness that many regions had suffered. Still, it was enough to make her glad again of the blessings of Sigmar that ran through her veins. Without them, she was sure the rancid waters and drifting spores of this marsh would have rendered her feverish by now. Afternoon finally brought drier ground again, though the conditions became no less fetid. Puddles of dank water squirmed with black nematodes, and fat flies buzzed between flowers that had blossomed sickly and rotten. Neve pressed on quickly, glancing behind her occasionally as the sense of watchfulness settled between her shoulder blades again. This time, she was certain she saw some drifting black speck high up and far behind, and she wondered for a moment about the ether wings of her comrades. "I pray to Sigmar that the Lord Aquila has not seen fit to send rangers to track me down," she sighed. "I dread the thought that my actions have led yet more Stormcast Eternals away from their allotted task." Still, she had known that he might. If it was so, she silently begged Sigmar's pardon and resolved to press on. She had taken a few more steps when another, darker thought struck her. Neve glanced back again, squinting to make out a shape. The black speck had vanished, leaving her with only suspicions of avian familiars and the followers of Zelkin Zerkanos playing upon her mind. An hour later, as she jogged up a low mound between boulders thick with moss, Neve heard distant shouts on the breeze. The clash of metal on metal followed, and a high squeal that she recognised instantly. Skaven. Neve swept her axes from her back and dropped into a crouching run that carried her swiftly to the top of the rise. She slid in behind a boulder that jutted proud of the hilltop, slowly leaning out around it so her silhouette would not show against the horizon. Beyond the next downslope, the land dried out a little more, turning into tussocky grassland dotted with rocks and boulders. Perhaps a quarter mile ahead of her, Neve saw a life-or-death struggle playing out. The aggressors were Skaven, as she had suspected. Neve counted more than 30 of the ratmen, swathed in the rank robes of plague monks of the clan's pestilence.
They wielded a motley assortment of rusted blades, clubs, and a few rattling flails from which foul fumes billowed. Two of the Skaven dragged heavy chains attached to the neck of a hulking rat ogre, its snout flared, and its eyes blind orbs. Against this mass of vermin stood a single rider and mount. In the moment Neve took to absorb and assess the scene, she saw the rider was a human female, probably in her teenage years. She was tough-looking, clad in leather armour and furs, her russet skin pierced and tattooed, her hair shaved at the sides and swept into a spiked crest down the centre. The beast she rode was larger than a griff charger, insectile with an armoured carapace, a mass of clattering legs and a shovel-shaped head that was all eye clusters, gnashing mandibles and jutting antlers. As Neve slid over the ridge and began to run towards the fight, she thought for a moment that the girl was unarmed. Then she saw the vambraces made of copper hoops encasing both forearms, saw the girl clench her fists and punch her arms towards her attackers. Jade energy flashed around the coils with each gesture, rocketing forth to smash one plague monk from his feet and crush the skull of another. By the time Neve's speed had picked up to a sprint and the ground was blurring beneath her, she had registered the two other crumpled steeds lying near to where the girl was fighting her defiant last stand. Fur-draped figures sprawled there, unmoving. Neve took in every detail of the conflict in the 6 seconds it took her to assess and then charge into the fight. By comparison, neither the Skaven nor their victim even realized she was there until she struck. Neve's whirlwind axes spun in a deadly arc, lopping the head from one plague monk and opening another from gut to throat. Thin blood sprayed through the air and fat buboes burst with audible pops as Neve's weapons ripped through the diseased ratmen. Shrieks and chitters erupted in her wake as the Skaven registered this new attacker. They were quick-witted, their senses sharp and their desire for self-preservation making them naturally inclined to suspect attack from unexpected quarters. Thus, even as Neve spun on the balls of her feet and prepared to make another pass through the fight, the plague monks were upon her. "Keep fending them off!" she shouted to the girl. "I'll thin their numbers!" She received barely a glance in response, the young tribeswoman focusing all her attention on the fight. Neve saw her punch out again, snapping one of the plague senses in two from 20 feet away and bowling its wielder end over end. Another Skaven hacked its rusted cleaver into her steed's flank and was impaled on a chitinous leg for its efforts. Neve parried in a blistering series of sweeps, shattering the poorly made and rust-encrusted blades of her foes. Several frenzied stabs and swings clanged from the sigmarite of her armour, and she was glad of its protection. She could taste the poisons that coated the Skaven weapons, that made them far more dangerous than they had any right to be. An axe blow split a muzzle like cordwood. Another sweep ripped out a throat in a spray of gore. Then something huge was barreling through the press of ratmen, and Neve was forced to launch herself into a backflip to leap clear of the swing of a huge clawed fist. She saw the rat ogre coming at her, its grotesquely flared nostrils twitching, its head cocked to one side. A fetid stink washed ahead of it, of chemical sweat and unwashed flesh. Neve felt the pounding vibration of its approach hard through the ground. It trailed the chains that its two handlers had released, and it bore down on her unerringly.
"You can't see me, can you?" she said, grunting as she locked her axes to stave off another thunderous claw swing.
The rat ogre howled, spraying her with spittle, and raked its claws at her in a disemboweling strike. Neve leapt back again and spun as she went, lashing out and shattering the bones of the beast's paw with her axes. The rat ogre screeched with pain and recoiled, flapping its useless hand. Neve took the opportunity to go on the offensive, leaping into the air and raining axe blows upon her attacker. The beast threw up its forearms to shield itself, reacting faster than Neve could have believed possible, and she hacked half a dozen bloody gouges in its limbs before she landed. Enraged, the rat ogre swung its good arms sidelong at her, trying to swat this painful attacker away. Neve swayed under the blow, throwing herself backwards and catching her fall on the hilts of her axes, as the wrecking ball arm whistled over her face to smash into a luckless plague monk. Neve pushed hard and drove herself back to her feet with her axes, flipping clean over the rat ogre and slamming down behind it. She scissored her axes through its thick neck, then spun away as its head tumbled from its shoulders. The rat ogre reeled out into the fight, limbs still swinging in its death throes. Meanwhile, the surviving Skaven, their fanatical fervour overcoming their natural fear of danger, hurled themselves at her. Neve fended one away with an axe blow, wove around a stabbing thrust, and allowed it to impale another plague monk, then brought her knee up sharply into the chin of a third foe and broke its neck. Seeing their numbers thinning, she whirled and kicked the rat man behind her, caving in his throat before lashing her axes into a tight figure of eight to hack the arm from one and the head from another. Suddenly, there were no enemies around Neve, just sprawled corpses. She shot a glance towards the girl, in time to see her raise the last of the Skaven into the air amidst a phantasmic corona of jade energies. The girl clapped her hands together with a yell of anger and hate, and the Skaven was crushed as though caught between two boulders. Blood jetted, and its mangled carcass thumped to the floor. Neve had hurled herself into the fight because she had seen a single human in danger. Now, able to properly appraise the girl she had saved, she kept her axes in hand. Her eyes flickered over the girl's tribal markings, hunting for any sigil of the dark gods. She saw no sign of the physical stigma that such worship usually caused. No vestigial horns, mutant limbs, scaled skin, no obvious mutation. Yet the girl's steed was a strange and dangerous-looking beast, and the weapons she wielded were clearly magical in nature. The girl looked back at her with frank aggression, chin jutting, shoulders heaving from the exertion of battle. Vermin blood dripped slowly from her fists and body. "I am Neve Blacktalon," said Neve. The girl made no response, and Neve hoped that she could make herself understood. Many mortal tribes still spoke some branch of the old tongues of the Age of Myth, even now. Yet often it was corrupted and hard to understand. Sometimes there was no common bridge of language whatsoever. "I am a Stormcast Eternal," said Neve, "of the Hammers of Sigmar." At the name of the God King, the girl's face twitched with recognition. "You know that name, yes? Sigmar?" Neve took a step closer, and the insect steed skittered and stomped in response. Something in its thorax began a dry rattle, a clear warning to stay back. "Do you understand me?" asked Neve, repeating herself in several common dialects. She had travelled the realms more than many of her comrades, ranged further and encountered hundreds of different cultures. Thanks to the blessings of Sigmar and her own gift for swift comprehension, she had learned at least the rudiments of dozens of languages. At last, her words brought a spark of understanding to the girl's eyes. "You understand this? You know who I am, what I'm saying?" asked Neve. The girl nodded, eyes still fierce. "You are a Sky Knight," said the girl, her accent thick and sharp. "From the heavens."
"Yes," said Neve. "I am one of Sigmar's warriors. We have come to defend the mortal realms, to win the war against chaos."
"You have come to kill," said the girl, "but you will not kill me."
Fast as thought, she punched out with both hands. Green light flared like a star, and a sorcerous projectile tore through the air towards Neve's head. Chapter 8. It was like being hit by a battering ram. Neve tasted blood as she was thrown through the air. She hit the ground in a boneless roll, turning the motion into a smooth slide and regaining her feet in time to see another jade blast coming at her. The girl swung her arm backhand, the projectile cuffing Neve in the side of the head and deforming the faceplate of her helm as it threw her sideways. Shock turned rapidly to anger, and as Neve rolled to her feet again, she tore the buckled helm from her head and cast it aside.
Blood dripped from her temple down the side of her face, crawling with lazy blue sparks. The girl hesitated for an instant as her eyes met Neve's. The Stormcast seized her chance and flashed forward like lightning. Her opponent tried to react, but against Neve's inhuman swiftness, she stood little chance. Neve hit the girl and tackled her out of her saddle, smashing the air from her lungs and slamming her into the ground 20 yards from her steed. Neve cushioned the girl's fall, rolling with her, taking the brunt of an impact that would have broken mortal bones. She wound up with one knee pressed into her attacker's chest and her axes hovering menacingly above her face. The girl coughed, blinked, tried to drag in a breath of air. Her eyes watered, then focused. Her face twisted with anger and jade energies flashed along her coiled vambraces. "Don't," said Neve, hefting one axe. "I'm much faster than you, I'm much stronger, and regardless of what you think, I have no desire to kill you. But my duty comes first. If you endanger that again..." She left the words hanging. She sensed no taint on this girl, no hint of the dark gods. But there was fear behind her anger and pain. In Neve's experience, such emotions could drive mortals to foolish acts. For a moment longer, the girl stayed tense. Then the jade sparks flickered to nothingness and she sagged. "Better," said Neve, easing the pressure of her armoured knee on the girl's sternum. Letting her breathe a little freer, but staying watchful for the slightest sign of aggression. "Can you take those off?" She pointed her chin at the girl's vambraces and received a sullen nod in response. "Good, then I'm going to let you go, and you're going to disarm yourself. Yes?" Another nod. Neve slid into a standing position and backed away, casting a glance towards the girl's steed as she did so. The insectile beast had approached warily, heavy footfalls thudding in the mossy grass. Its thorax still gave out that dry rattle, but it made no move to attack. The girl rose. Neve saw her muscles tense as she clearly thought about bolting again. Neve tensed as well, making it obvious that she had predicted the girl's thoughts and was ready to halt her break for freedom. The girl thought better of it, staring defiantly at Neve as she unbound brass cog clasps, one at a time, and let her ensorcelled vambraces drop. She shot a glance at her steed, as though willing the beast to act. When it held its place, the girl muttered something angrily that might have been "traitor," and turned back to face Neve.
"Now what?" she asked. "You kill me, Sky Knight?"
"Now you tell me your name," said Neve, "and how you came to be hunted by Skaven in this remote place."
"I am born Catalia Morn, and he is Keto," said the girl, gesturing at her steed. "I am Morn tribe," she continued, and Neve caught the look she shot towards her fallen comrades. "I am all of the Morn tribe," she said quietly.
"I'm sorry," said Neve, and found that she meant it.
"You are not," said Catalia fiercely. "You don't know Sky Knight Sigmar's killers. What do you know of us? You are no better than the rats."
Neve was saddened by the girl's words, but not entirely shocked. She thought back to some of the pacification campaigns her Vanguard Auxiliary Chamber had been involved with. The tribes slaughtered more for their ignorance than any true desire to malfeasance. Still, it chilled her to think that the Stormcasts could be perceived with quite such venom.
"Is that what you think?" asked Neve.
"The Shrike tribe thought different," replied Catalia. "Their shamans said the gods sent you. They celebrated your coming. Then the White Sky Knights came. They call themselves the Excelsior. They answered the Shrike's welcome with lightning and steel. They drove them from their homes around the Gate of the Gods. They killed them all. That is what you do. You kill."
Neve shook her head. "The Knights Excelsior know nothing of restraint," she said. "If the Shrike tribe held a realm gate they had been ordered to capture, if there were signs that the tribe had been worshipping the dark gods, the hammers of Sigmar are different, I promise you."
"Knights, hammers, whatever you call yourselves doesn't matter," said Catalia. You are no better than the blood screamers, or the rusted ones, or these Radkin filth, all killers, all seek to take our freedom.
Neve thought for a moment, then slung her axes and relaxed her posture. Unhelmed, unarmed, blood scabbing on her temple and hair sweat-sleeked from battle, she hoped that she looked more human than many of her comrades might. "I am sorry for all that has happened to you," she said, "and I swear that I mean you no harm. I just want to understand how you came to be here and whether I can aid you. Sigmar's servants were sent to the realms to protect and to reclaim, not to kill the innocent." Catalia snorted and spat. She folded her arms and stood in silence, chin jutting. It was a good act, but it could not fool Neve's senses. The girl's heart was beating too fast, and minute muscle twitches gave away the sorrow and fear she was trying to mask. Neve found herself reappraising the girl's age. Beneath the feral garb and the warrior piercings, she could not be much older than 16 years. There was something more, though, that Neve couldn't put a finger on. Her heart went out to Catalia. She felt inclined to trust her, despite all her better instincts. "You're fallen," said Neve, gesturing. "Go to them if you need to."
"Turn my back so you can put an axe in it?" asked Catalia. "Morn, do not raise their kind, stupid Sky Knight."
Neve sighed, exasperated. "Very well. Then at least tell me how you came to be here. Are there more Skaven hunting you, or was that the extent of them?" Catalia remained silent, but the tensing of her shoulders and the dart of her eyes to the horizon told Neve all she needed to know. "More out there, then," she said. "It can't just be coincidence. Do they serve him, I wonder?" Again she read a flicker of reaction from Catalia at her words. For all her obstinacy, the girl showed little skill at hiding her emotions. "You know of whom I speak," she asked. "You know who the Skaven call master." Catalia cast another look at Keto, but the insect had settled back on its haunches now. It wasn't even rattling. She shook her head in annoyance and sighed, letting her arms drop.
"The Swamp King," she said. "The rats serve the Swamp King. They have done for many years, since before I was born. They have always hunted the tribes. Them, the rusted ones, the monsters. But these seasons, they come many, many, since your kind arrive."
Catalia stared accusingly at Neve.
"You made the Swamp King angry, and we suffer for it. Like I said, you are all killers."
"I had never thought," said Neve, taken aback. Of course the servants of Chaos would visit their displeasure on those less able to protect themselves, she thought. How many mortal tribes had faced persecution and death in revenge for a war they had not started and took no part in? The thought made her nauseous. "Catalia, I believe that it is the Swamp King I am here for," she said earnestly. Sigmar made me hunt men like the Swamp King and kill them. So yes, I am a killer, Catalia, but not of your people. I am a killer of those who want to hurt them. I am here to protect you." The girl stared at her, then turned her gaze towards her fallen fellows. Neve saw a single tear track, unwanted and unacknowledged, down Catalia's cheek.
"You're too late,"
the girl said bitterly. "I'll leave you with them for a time," said Neve softly. "There may be more Skaven. Wherever you see one, there's 13 more you don't. I'm going to scout the area, make sure we're safe. I'll come back." Catalia ignored her, and Neve took her cue to depart. She loped away through the tussocky hillocks, spreading her senses out in search of danger, and hoped the girl would still be there when she came back. A half-hour sweep took Neve 2 dozen leagues out towards the roots of the mountain, into the afternoon shadows cast by its towering enormity. A whole range's worth of lesser crags rose from the mountain's slopes, and its split peak jutted up like a witch's finger forking the sign of the evil eye. As she stared up at it, Neve felt again that stirring sense of familiarity, and felt her temples ache at the way it jarred with her knowledge of the now. She swept back in the opposite direction, scouting a wide parabola around the site where she had met Catalia, giving the girl time. Whether to mourn her fallen, or to make good her escape, Neve couldn't say which. There was no sign of further Skaven beyond the trail the warband had left as it pursued Catalia and her comrades from somewhere southwards. Yet still Neve couldn't shake the feeling of danger drawing close, an instinct she had long ago learned to trust. She cast glances back across the marshes from whence she had come, seeking skyborn specks or enemies drawing near. "You've spent too long on this girl already. Sigmar only knows why," she told herself, as she hastened back to the site of her recent battle. "If she's there, you figure out what to do with her quickly, then you press on. If not, so much the better." It was with some surprise that she smelt and heard the girl and her steed still lingering upon her return. Neve was careful to approach slowly and from an open direction, making no secret of her coming. She could taste the magic of Catalia's vambraces tainting the air again, and was in no hurry to surprise the girl and receive another jade blast for her troubles.
"What have you done to Keto?"
demanded Catalia hotly. Neve drew to a stop some yards away from the girl, took in the severed Skaven ears hanging from her belt, and the cairn of freshly piled stones that lay off to one side of the battlefield. The insect steeds lay where they had fallen, but of the dead tribesmen there was no sign. "I haven't done anything to your beast," said Neve, frowning. "Why, does he ail? The plague monks seethe with disease, girl. You shouldn't have lingered amongst them." Catalia snorted dismissively.
"Keto isn't sick. Tribes, beasts, all that live in the mountain's shadow, they live this long. They don't get sick anymore. No, you bewitched him."
Neve was taken aback. "I don't have the power to do that."
"He wouldn't leave," shouted the girl. "I tried to carry on my hunt, but he wouldn't leave. He waited for you."
Catalia kicked one of Keto's chitinous legs, the limb towering higher at its arced knee joint than the top of her head. Keto gave a patient, chittering noise, tilted his head, nudged Catalia with it. He waved long antennae in Neve's direction and chittered again.
"He's a stupid beast," said Catalia sullenly,
rubbing one palm against the insect's tough chitin. She hugged herself with her other arm. Neve kept her face